We are talking about parenting without power struggles, raising joyful, resilient kids while staying cool, calm, and connected by Susan Stifelman. What do you think the foundation of parenting is? Research shows the best predictor of a teenager's health and the strongest deterrent to high-risk behavior was a close relationship with a parent or other adult figure. This is one of the reasons why Susan believes having a strong relationship with our children is the foundation of parenting. This is not about being their best friend, but it does require mutual respect. Our children need to know that they can trust us, confide in us, and ultimately look to us for advice. Not just children, but everyone shares a fundamental need to feel appreciated and accepted. So if they aren't getting acceptance and approval from you, they will seek out their peers. Susan writes, a child who is not parentally attached will become peer attached, and peers are incapable of being reliable North Stars. So to create a better relationship with your child, you will have to learn to show interest in who they really are with your time and attention. If you inspire them to feel appreciated, understood, wanted, and loved, I promise they will want to be around you. See, people like us for the way we make them feel about themselves. So ask yourself, if you were your child, how would it feel being around you as the parent? What messages are you sending them daily? Our parent-child relationship is rather fluid. At times, it's hard to tell who's running the show. Susan says there are three main options in regards to who's running the household. First up is no one in charge, or the two lawyers. This is when both parent and child are debating, trying to exert control over the situation. We are all familiar with the feeling of negotiating with a teenager or child. The danger of no one in charge is it very quickly turns into child in charge, which is our second option. Susan's explanation of child in charge is somewhat counterintuitive, but it is when, and I quote, the parent feels desperate and powerless and resorts to bribes and threats in an attempt to exert control. So for example, if you don't clean your room, then I'm going to ground you and take away your phone. See, Susan explains further, when your child doesn't do what you ask and you become emotional or begin delivering ever-escalating threats, he senses your panic. Your dramatic response literally shifts the hierarchy, and for all practical purposes, you've handed responsibility for the outcome over to the child. He who is the most attached to a particular outcome has the least amount of power. So before discussing our third option, I hope to help you understand that there is a very big difference between a threat and a consequence. A threat is typically to elicit an emotional reaction and upset our children to gain their compliance. This is manipulation. But a consequence is either a natural consequence of their action, such as if you refuse to eat dinner, then you're going to be hungry, or it's a pre-established consequence. In my household, my daughter has to take care of her chores and homework before TV time. Therefore, if she chooses not to do her chores, she is choosing not to watch TV because she is well aware of the pre-established consequence. The third option is parent in charge, and Susan likes to refer to this as being the captain of your ship. We expect a captain to be calm, in charge of his crew, with a mutual respect between crew and captain. If the crew doesn't trust and respect the captain, then the whole ship is in jeopardy. The captain doesn't expect a problem-free journey and is prepared for the storms, just as we should be prepared for the fact that our kids are going to cry, get angry, flunk the test, leave dishes in the sink, have bad attitudes. It's not our children, but our unrealistic expectation that our kids should be perfect that makes us unprepared to deal with the reality of parenting. Having a child that fails doesn't make you a bad parent. It means you're parenting a human. So stop taking your child's limitations personally and stop having higher expectations for your children than you do for yourself. Your children unconsciously model your behavior, and Susan reminds us to live like your kids are watching because they are. How often do your kids ask you for something? Maybe it's water, breakfast, help with homework, and you tell them to wait. And then they remind you and you bark, "Hold on, I am." But in reality, you're really doing 10 million other things. Yet when you tell them to do a chore, you expect immediate compliance. See, we expect one thing from our kids, yet model another. And I'm certainly not suggesting that you drop everything and cater to your kids at all times, but I do think you need to give your kids the same courtesies you demand they give you. Our lives at home can be as unpredictable as the ocean. We can't control the ocean, and we cannot control our kids either. I'm sorry, but it's true. You cannot control someone else's emotions or actions. You can influence them, of course, but you cannot control them. Susan says, and I quote, "When our children perceive us as steady and calm, regardless of their moods or behavior, they can relax, knowing they can rely on us to get them through the challenging moments of their lives." So I realize that keeping your calm can be extremely difficult, but it's crucial that we take control of the only thing we can, which is ourselves. If you're struggling with your own emotions, it will be impossible to be the captain of your household and remain calm with your disobedient children. Learning to deal with your own issues and perceptions should become a very high priority. So check out my book review of Loving What Is or Emotional Intelligence. Both reviews are to help you gain control over your emotions and reactions. So this all sounds great, and it's totally easier said than done. So how do we actually become the captain of our households? With Act 1 and 2 parenting, this is the key, and it's summed up with Susan's phrase, connection before direction. So this two-step process can be used with any issue. If they're mad they can't watch TV, upset over a breakup, frustrated with homework, they want a candy bar. So Act 1 is the connection part. Allow your child to express their problem or upset without denying their reality. Too often we tell our kids how they should feel. You shouldn't be upset. Or we outright deny what they do feel or they say they feel. So this is, you're not hungry. Ask yourself, why does their misbehavior actually make sense? What is the payoff for their acting out? And try to understand them. You are not agreeing with them or their actions. You are simply showing them you understand. I understand you want the candy bar, sweetheart. It can be so difficult not getting everything you want. Opposed to coming at them and saying, stop throwing such a fit, keep it up and you'll lose dessert for a week. See, when a child doesn't get their way, they experience a miniature DABDA, also known as the five stages of grief. This is denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So when you tell your son he can't go to his friend's house, he may not accept your answer and keep trying. He's in denial. When he realizes you're firm, he will get angry and likely try bargaining some more. When that fails, he will be sad. This is the depression phase, and if allowed to, because no one rejected his reality, he will move on to acceptance. If you aren't ready for their storm, their DABDA, their emotions will irritate you. But if you know it's coming, you will handle it calmly, with authority, like a captain. We can't save our children disappointment in life, and in fact, if you do, it will actually hurt them in the long run. Susan says we must let go of the false belief that when we eliminate their frustrations, we're demonstrating our love. The truth is, when we prevent children from experiencing frustration, we are crippling them from developing vital life skills of learning to adapt. For more on the importance of allowing children to experience challenges and failure, check out my Eureka Moment on praise. So, when do I get to parent, right? During Act 2, this is the direction part, so connection before direction. Act 2 is only after Act 1. After the upset has dissipated, then we can teach and offer our advice in a respectful way, and then we can establish a consequence if necessary. So my favorite thing to do is to ask my child what she thinks the appropriate consequence is for her action. This is just a tip. It may not work for you, but what I've found is that kids are very fair with the consequence, and they are more likely to accept it because it was their idea in the first place. So in summary, the goal is to understand your child and have a deep connection with them. Be prepared for their grief process, the DABDA. Come alongside your child and not at them. Once they feel understood, you can offer support and guidance. Children will only be receptive to your direction if you first practice connection. Remember, connection before direction. Please check out Susan's website and the actualization worksheet. I will end today with a quote. Having a child is like getting a gift that continues to unwrap itself. Thank you for joining me. I have many more book reviews on parenting, as well as a virtue class for a more in-depth look on parenting, and you make it a great day.